Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. This podcast is all about conversations about healing and rising from the ashes of your grief and trauma. In this podcast, we will be deconstructing and highlighting the different aspects of grief and loss. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. We just got done talking about how nature can be relatively predictable. Well, when you have a ritual as well, that can give you a sense of control. Loss and trauma feels very out of control in our lives. Whatever I can do to give me a sense of control without being overly controlling, being so overly controlling that I'm not allowing myself to feel the way that I'm feeling. That's not what we're looking for. We need a sweet spot. So if I'm doing the ritual, here's my ritual. This is what I'm ritualizing. And I'm over here and I'm doing something with it. So I'm here, I can witness it. But I'm not so far away from it that I'm not engaged with it. So it's a sweet spot. And it gives me that sense of control without feeling overwhelmed or underwhelmed. It also, as we know, we were just talking about like a funeral. It can provide a sense of closure. Look, grief doesn't end. If anybody ever tells you that, except there are no five stages of grief, I'm going to make that very clear. I've said it before. I got a whole two podcast, you know, episodes of there is no five stages of grief. There are no five stages of grief. There are there is an acceptance of the reality of loss. You know it here in your head, but do you know it here in your heart? That takes some time. But acceptance isn't where it ends. You know, we grow. We have opportunities to figure out who we are in a greater sense. Things do not end at acceptance. And anyway, I'm not going to get sidetracked because I already bitched about it in a previous podcast. So, but when I say closure, it's like a marker. Like this is the end of one phase and the beginning of another phase. Think about all of us who had losses during COVID where we weren't able to attend funerals. There is a reason why. I mean, when you hear people say, I wasn't able to attend a funeral, you're like, oh my God, that must have been, I can't even imagine what that must have been like for you. Think about that. There's a reason why. That lack of ritual, we know it intuitively how important it is to be there and be present, but for personal reasons and for societal reasons. And this allows us to work through things from an unconscious perspective, because you can't think your way through grief. You can think things, but you have to experience grief. It unfolds naturally. You can't force it to go any faster. It's like looking at a flower and wishing it to bloom faster. It's not going to do it. You can watch it as Quinn pushing all your might, trying to make it, you know, bloom faster. It's not going to. Your grieving process is unique to you. Every loss is unique to you. Your trauma is unique to you. You could have lost your brother. His name was Damien. He was 22. He died from a heroin overdose on Christmas Day. All of those things. But because I'm an entirely different person than you are, you're never going to be able to understand my loss. You will never, ever hear me say to anybody, I lost my brother too, I know exactly how you feel. No, you don't. You don't know exactly how I feel. And I don't know exactly how you feel. Can I relate to what you're feeling? I probably can relate to what you're feeling, but I can't say I know what you're feeling. Which, keep that in mind, because one of the things that we want to look at is what are some things to say and then other things that you're not supposed to say. So there are functions to ritual, and I don't want to get too like psychobabble on you here, but it helps, like I said, create a container for your feelings, gives you an opportunity to express your emotions and your beliefs. It can make, you know, mark those changes. These are all things that we've been talking about, so it can mark those changes, the positions in your life. It can help manage and tolerate the tragedies that you've gone through in your life, like I said, for many of the reasons that we've been talking about, by being out in nature and having that ritual that gives you the sense of control. It can take like really complicated situations and bring it together so that it's not so overwhelming. So when I have a bereavement ritual, and there's so much connected to it, this allows me to have a focus. And if it's giving me a focus and it's giving me this container, it allows me to feel less overwhelmed by it. It helps maintain a continued bond. And what do I mean by that? A continued bond is maintaining a connection to the person that you've lost in a different way. Now, not all cultures are cool with this. So we can't assume if somebody is saying, no, I don't want to maintain a continued bond, that like that just does not happen in our culture, that they're doing anything wrong. That doesn't mean they're doing anything wrong. But what we do know is that the idea of moving on versus moving forward, we've changed the wording around that. You do not move on. You can move forward. And it's going to be sticky, and it's going to be confusing, and it's going to be ugly, and it's going to go all wacky, and it's not going to be a straight line, and that's okay. And you're going to say, you know, hey, I feel like I'm making progress, and then something happens, and it flips you right back to, you know, something happens, and you flip right back to, you know, a way of feeling that you thought that you had moved through already. That's natural too. We have difficult times that come up during the year, like I said, Christmas, his birthday, Father's Day, for those of you who don't know, this is the 17th, tomorrow's Father's Day. Father's Day might suck for a whole lot of people. You know, you have all the, oh, it's Father's Day, don't forget, take care of your dad. What if my dad just died? What if I didn't have a relationship with my dad that was healthy and he traumatized me? What do I do with that? So, but maintaining a continued bond in a healthy way, like where I'm able to say, Damien, I could use your help through this. It's just a way of remaining connected to his memory, where I don't forget that he was there. It's a different kind of relationship. It can allow you to say goodbye to your past with the ritual, so you can say goodbye to who you used to be. It doesn't mean that that part of you doesn't exist. It just means when we have a loss, you often feel, and I've talked about this in a previous podcast as well, when you have a loss, you can begin to feel like your anchors aren't there anymore, like you're kind of floating around. Well, if I'm trying to reconnect in a different way, then I'm looking for ways to feel re-anchored. And so saying goodbye to who I used to be before the loss, or saying goodbye to the life I used to have, it's a nice way of having some closure, and that can be helpful. It doesn't mean you leave it behind. I want to be really, really clear. It doesn't mean you leave it behind. It just means you're not attached to it in the same way. These bereavement rituals that I've talked to you about, it provides a sense of being interconnected. So, and I don't want to kind of repeat the same thing over and over again, but we just talked about how we become connected in a society with our bereavement rituals. And it can mark these transitions in the grieving process and mark transitions into trying to understand who you are in the world. It also affirms your relationship with the person that you've lost. So if I'm doing something that completely is related and focused on the loss of somebody that I've had in my life, It is saying, yes, this relationship was important. As confusing as it might have been, as wonky as it might have been, or as healthy and happy as it might have been, it's just affirming the fact that there was a relationship there. And that's important to recognize. And then it can be, you can have a lot of positive connections between ritual and mental health. So there's like a reduction in trauma responses, there's a reduction in anxiety, in reduction in depression, an ability to problem solve more effectively, and having a greater sense of well-being. And that's all backed up by research. I'm not just making this shit up. That's all backed up by research. So there's a lot of functions to bereavement rituals. There are three kinds of rituals as well. I just want to make sure I point these out. There's the honoring kind of ritual, which is when you honor, you elicit and express positive emotions. And this is often with those symbols that I talked about, the brownie. And when you come up to these important dates, the holidays coming up, Those are difficult for some people. Birthdays or whatever comes up that is you need to honor your relationship. That's what you're using as a ritual, an honoring ritual. There's what we call disposal rituals, which is a letting go of something, perhaps letting go of guilt or regret or if onlys or shoulds. It's about being able to process and release those painful emotions that we have. And that is often done in a ritual where you do things with objects. And don't go and do this because it's bad for the environment, but I'm trying to give you an example. You know, maybe it's you symbolizing some way, somehow, guilt, maybe if that's the thing that you're needing to let go of, and you write guilt on a piece of paper, you tie it to a string, and there's a balloon, and you let go of the balloon, and off it goes. Do not release balloons in the environment. I'm just trying to give you an example. Another thing you can do is cut up a piece of paper and burn the paper and burn it in a safe place so you don't burn anything down either. And a lot of times in those kinds of rituals, these disposal rituals, it's often done with the use of their the four elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And then finally, you've got transformation rituals. And these often happen when we're moving forward in our grieving process, when we're beginning to heal and notice that we're feeling better. This is when you're really trying to internalize who you are becoming and evaluating your life and identify the negative feelings of the process. So it's not like all, rainbows and unicorns. Transformation does often, come in a very painful way. You may be starting to plan for the future. And also being able to have, in these transformation rituals, there's very much a focus on future. When you have integrated a loss into your life, one of the things that you're looking for, like for example, if you were coming to me for therapy, one of the things that I'm looking for is, are you starting to make future goals? Are you starting to use the energy that was tied up in your grieving process to have new relationships or strengthen, current ones? Are you moving forward with goals that maybe you didn't have before? So transformation rituals can help with that. And sometimes we do that by transforming objects. So those are different kinds of grief rituals. And I already talked to you about symbolic objects. And again, that's the brownie I was talking about, but that validates the relationship. It doesn't have to be a complex symbol. It can be something that's very simple, because they're so, they have so much, so much emotion embedded in them anyway. And it helps facilitate the remembering your relationship with somebody and all the details of your relationship. And it encourages that expression of your feelings. It represents maybe the emotion that you invested in the relationship in the first place. And then it helps to manage separation anxiety, which is interesting. So if I have, let's say that my wedding ring belonged to my grandmother, that when I wear my wedding ring, I think of my grandmother. It's almost it helps me manage, feeling separated from her. Like, just think of a kid with a blanket, and the reduction of separation anxiety. It's a soothing feeling. And some people have their objects their entire lives. Some people, I'm noticing, are getting tattoos of their loved one with their loved one's handwriting, or getting other tattoos. Like, I've got a client that has a tattoo of a specific insect. I'm trying to honor her confidentiality, has one of a specific insect that reminded her of her mom. And when she looks at this tattoo, it reminds her of her mother. So not only is that an object, but that's one that she's not getting rid of anytime soon. So that's all about nature and nature-based rituals and why they can be so empowering and why they're so impactful. So now let's talk about how you can develop your own nature-based ritual. All right, you ready? Grab a piece of paper. Here we go. You can write these things down. The first thing is that you have to identify what you're ritualizing. So is this an ending? Is this a beginning? Is this an honoring? Are you transforming? Remember the ones we were just talking about earlier? Are you ritualizing an accomplishment or some form of connection? Is it one of separation, or are you transitioning? So, you know, that limbo place, or you're, you know, integrating. So for example, imagine the grieving process as having those three stages that we talked about. So what intention do you need to focus on in order to create your ritual? Because without it, you're not really doing anything that's going to be powerful, and you're going to waste your time. The intention has to be there. I give the example of when you walk, let's say you're Catholic and you walk into a church and you cross yourself. If you don't think about what you're doing and why you're doing it when you do that, that's not a ritual, that's a habit. We don't need a habit. We need an intention. Otherwise, none of anything we're getting ready to talk about is going to work at all, because you have to have the intention behind it. So think about that, what that might be. Think about why you want to do the ritual. That should be your next question. What's the purpose of this? Okay, so you're going to do it one of separation. Well, why do you want to do one of separation? Well, because I feel like I have not been able to move forward in my life. Okay, what are you separating from? So what symbols are best to bring? So I gave you an example of the brownie. And in other words, what meaningful objects could you create? You might be able to create something. Maybe you're going to look for something. So for example, maybe you're at the beach and you say, you know what's a really important object? Our shells, because we used to go to the beach all the time when we were kids. And that would help you connect with your intention. So if your intention is to have one of honoring your bond with that person, then you're going to look for things that make you feel connected to the person. Make sense? I think it makes sense. What do you need to do to effectively express that intention of the ritual? So for example, if you're intending to let go of fear, this is the example I gave before, maybe you would do something to make you have to face that fear. Like maybe you're afraid of water. I don't know. If you're afraid of water, you're kind of screwed because you probably stink. But hopefully you're not afraid of water. Maybe you would jump in a body of water. Or maybe you needed to let go of something and you felt like you needed to put it away. It was time to transform something. Well, maybe you bury that object. Or you want to start anew. So like I told you, like at the end of my rituals, I jump in a shower just to kind of start the day anew, to have a clean start for that day. So you want to make sure you include all those symbols that you came up with earlier. Okay. You got to decide if you need to speak any words or what role silence is going to play for you. And when in the ritual are you going to speak and when are you going to be silent? And then the really important one is, what is the sequence of the ritual? So what items do you need to include? What actions do you need to be what actions do you need to do to express that whole intention we talked about? I want you to make sure that you start with the planning phase all the way from the beginning. Like I make those brownies on Christmas Eve every single year. I've never not done that. I even got a knee replacement on the 19th of December in 2019, and I got my wounded self up and still made those brownies for Christmas. I couldn't miss that. So what items do you need to do? What do you need to do to prepare for your ritual? And make sure you start with that planning phase, like I said, and provide all the details from start to finish, so that if you read this to another person, that person could almost do the ritual the way you would do it. Wouldn't have the emotions, I'm not talking about that, but would say, oh, okay, Christmas Eve, you're gonna make brownies. Oh, and then I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna pack my journal and I'm gonna do this and do this, and then I'm gonna get in the car and I'm gonna do this and this and that. So all of those details. Why am I asking you to do that? If it's going to be something that's gonna be containing your feelings, especially when you're getting ready to engage in something that's making you come look full force into your loss, having the details of that allow you to go, I don't have to worry about trying to figure out what to do. I'm just going to do it and then feel and do the things that I need to do in this ritual. Now, as I talked about, nature has these very inherent healing qualities to it. So it'll help deepen the experience, that ritual experience. It's not just, like I talked about, it's not judgmental, it's not distracting, it can provide those soothing feelings, and it can provide mindfulness. Remember, we talked about it doesn't pull you away. So it can also give you that natural blueprint, all the things that we talked about earlier. So this is meant to be done outdoors. So you need to scope out your plan about where you're going to go, when's the right time, and when's the right place. Where can you find a place that's away from as many man-made objects as possible? And then think about, why did you choose this place? Does that have any meaning for you? And after that, any other thoughts or feelings that you have about it. So I'm going to leave you with this. I'm going to leave you with an example of the ritual that I used to do for my brother, which has since changed over time. A, because my knees are all broke up and I can't do the hiking I used to do. And B, because I'm from the East Coast, but I started doing this stuff when I was on the West Coast where it was warm on Christmas and I could do a lot more. And so now I'm back here where it's usually cold on Christmas. When I first started doing this, and this is that those steps that I just got done telling you, that's what I created from my dissertation. And that's what the people did in my dissertation. They filled out that paperwork. Then they went out and they did their ritual and they came back and I interviewed them. We had lots to talk about. I would get up on Christmas Eve, like I said, and I'd make my brownies. But then I would pack in my backpack the brownie, a lunch for me, a lunch for my brother. I'd pack my journal that I would write in once a year. I would pack a bundle of sage to smudge the area, which is like a belief of like cleansing the area of negative energy. And I would take a pen, obviously, everything I could think of that I needed. I had already, by that time, have scoped out a new place. I went to a new place every single year. Why did I do that? Because Damien never traveled anywhere. And for me, this was a way of showing him, of traveling with him. So even having a different place each year was done very intentionally. You know why I chose Christmas. That's been identified. In the morning, I didn't speak. I didn't speak because he can't speak. So it was a way of like remaining silent and in mindfulness, but also a way of reminding myself that Damien was no longer with me. I would take my bag. I would jump in my car. I would play Metallica. Yes, Metallica. It was his favorite band. Like I don't even know how many times he went to go see him. And I like a couple of their songs, so I was sorry. So play Metallica, go to that place, and then I would go to the place. I would take rocks from the place. I'd place them in the four directions, north, east, south, or west. I probably had them wrong, but whatever, the intention was there. And I took the smudge stick, and I, smudged the whole area, cleansed the whole area of any negative energy. And when I stepped into that ritual space, that circle that I created, that represents separation. I'm separating out from everything going on in my life and how I understood myself in the world, everything that's going on. The fact that Christmas is that day, the fact that just life. And now I'm in the ritual space. So now I'm in limbo, right? And I had it all planned out. I had it planned out the same way every year. I would, first thing I would do is I would write in the journal about my year and talking to my brother and all of that other stuff. And then I would eat the lunch, throw it on his part on the ground. I'd eat my brownie, made me very happy, put his on the ground. I knew why I did it. It was hard to let go of that. I had separation anxiety from the other second brownie. And then I would sit in silence and just be present. And I personally didn't think there were any words that needed to be spoken, so I didn't have any words that needed to be spoken. And I just kind of chilled out there and was just present with it. I thought about him. I thought about him dying. I thought about how hard it was. I would go through the story of the loss of him and how that all happened, everything I heard about, how I heard about his death and the day of his death. And I would think about how, I wonder how things would be different now. Now, since I've had to move, that ritual has changed. since I've moved back and it's cold and I'm a wimp and I don't like being out in the cold. I just take his picture, I light a candle, I put a brownie in front of his picture, I tell a story about him to my family. They don't touch the brownie because they know I will I wrap them around a tree out back somewhere, which is funny because they really actually don't bother getting near the brownie. I'm very proud of them. And then I go about my day. But part of that ritual will always remain the same. And for as long as I can stir some brownie batter, I will always have brownies on Christmas Day. So that's an example of mine. What do you do? I bet you guys do rituals already. I'd be very curious. You know, if you're watching this on YouTube, put some under the comments there. What are you doing as a ritual for the days that are important to you? After listening to this today, are you going to start doing them? Does this make sense to you? I would love to hear what you have to say. And if you hang on for about another 30 seconds, you'll have the ability to, you'll see a link or with a barcode or a QR code and a link to another page that's going to show you where you can sign up to meet with me for a couple of hours once a week, where you log in for like a live webinar. You may have questions that you might want to ask. You might just want to listen to see what everybody else does, but you'll have access to me, and then you'll be able to sign up and you'll have access to the archived sessions as well. But I think this is a nice way of developing a sense of community. And if you found this valuable, I hope that you did, and you want to be part of that community, you know, click on that link and I'd love to see you then. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for watching and listening, and have a good one. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We want to be a resource for anyone who is experiencing loss, and this is a simple way you can help us spread the word. Check out our show description. There you'll find a link to connect with me on social media, as well as helpful articles and resources.